Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Dale Parrish. My registration number is 11260. I'm here on behalf of Michael Perez. We have filed an appeal based upon three issues. Those three issues are, first, common law marriage, whether there was sufficient evidence to find that there was a common law marriage between Skase and McKeon and Michael Perez. Second, marital debt, whether the allocation of all marital debt to the respondent, Mr. Perez, was equitable and supported by evidence, competent, substantial, or even sworn evidence. And number three, the allocation of parental responsibilities entirely to the petitioner, who, based upon the court's order, had sole discretion over whether the children ever saw their father, which they had not. Number one, common law marriage. On this issue, the inquiry must be whether or not the common law marriage between parties was disputed.
Well, let me cast the question a little more narrowly. Can you point to any specific statement in the record that this case was about common law marriage?
Yes.
Please do.
On page 18 in the transcript of the August 30 emergency or temporary orders hearing, there is a colloquy between the court and the respondent regarding common law marriage. I believe the respondent's words are, absolutely not. He then went ahead and said it was against his faith, his religion, and the court had some responsive comments about common law marriage. The court, at one point in the record, said, quote, I don't know if it's a marriage or not. That is a factual issue to be litigated later.
Well, that doesn't mean it's a factual issue of common law marriage. It could be a factual issue as to whether there is a ceremonial marriage.
That's correct.
Okay. So is page 18 the page only 18. Reference you can point us to where specifically common law marriage is discussed?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And as you can see from the briefing by petitioner, the abandonment of the adjudicative process by father at the emergency hearing or temporary orders hearing at the end of August 2011 is the primary defense that mother sets forth in response to our three issues on appeal. That is that he walked out. I'm fed up. I'm not going to do this anymore. And he walked out.
Right. After the judge suggested to him, maybe invited to him, if you don't think it's a marriage, file a response to the petition. Mm-hmm. And that was never done.
No, it was not.
The petitioner didn't allege common law marriage. She alleged a specific marriage, a specific date, a specific place. She didn't allege common law marriage, right?
The petitioner did not allege common law marriage, nor did she allege a ceremonial marriage or a wedding ceremony of any type.
Well, she alleged a date and a place. I don't know exactly.
She did not allege a date. She alleged a month. April of 2004.
And the mention of common law marriage emerged from the, well, you just read it from that place in the transcript. The court didn't suggest it was common law marriage. The petitioner didn't suggest it was common law marriage. The respondent, he said, I don't believe in common law marriage. It's against my religion. To which the judge said, file something, which he never did.
Yes, the respondent said, we were never married. That was his opening remark. And then followed it with, absolutely not. And then the comments about common law marriage. The court inferred from that it was a common law marriage, and nowhere in the record did the petitioner ever allege a ceremony or any type of wedding, and she didn't give a particular date. I might also add that the justices may be familiar with a petition. Petitions for dissolution of marriage ask not only for a specific date of marriage, but a location, none of which was ever provided.
Oh, the petition says they were married in North Glen, Colorado, according to my copy.
My argument is that here, the fact that the court was on notice that the existence of a marriage was disputed means, once it's in dispute, the court needs to make minimal findings about the existence of a marriage in order to go forward in a dissolution of marriage.
And in December, when they were at permanent orders, the judge did find there had been a marriage. There had been a marriage in 2004 on the record. In the written orders, he said the marriage is irretrievably broken. There was a record in December that the court found there was a marriage. My question to you is, when you filed the motion to set aside that order, I see nothing in that motion challenging the finding of merit.
In the motion to set aside the fault?
Nothing. It's about the parental responsibility. The other issues you don't argue, but maybe not to set aside the finding of marriage.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And that was with the lawyer.
And I don't believe there was any waiver from that failure to include that issue in the motion to set aside default. That does not support a waiver. And there's no case law to suggest such, and there's no case law in the petitioner's answer brief to suggest that that's a waiver. If you examine it closely, there's not a single case that's cited in support of that waiver argument based upon those facts. The mother concedes that when the issue is in dispute, certain facts must be established. So what that does is that makes the question, was the issue in dispute or not? Mother argues that it is not in dispute. I'm sorry, I'm referring to appellee or petitioner when I refer to mother. Mother argues that it is not in dispute, and that's because it was not contested at the permitted orders hearing, and it was not disputed in a pleading. The question is, first of all, must it be disputed in a pleading? It was disputed on the record, and the judge had a conversation with the respondent directly about the issue. Second, you can infer that it was disputed in a pleading. Why? Because the judge notes that respondent filed a petition for allocation of parental responsibilities on the same day a petition for dissolution of marriage was filed. What that means is the court correctly inferred that respondent father was suggesting they were never married, and all the court needed to do was allocate parental responsibilities. The petition for APR is a clear indicator that there is no marriage and that the children, parental responsibility for the children, is what the court must allocate or must adjudicate.
No, I'm sorry, you lost me. How exactly does the APR constitute an assertion that they were never married?
Inferentially.
There is no such assertion in the pleading?
Not in the pleading.
Okay,
thank you. By the way, that pleading's not in the record, is it?
No.
No.
No. Curious, but the fact is, August...
You're the appellant. I was asking you kind of why isn't it in the record.
Well, the August 30 transcript, Judge Vallejos clearly refers to that petition for allocation of parental responsibility. Yeah. And it's part and parcel of this conversation, which he says, if you're disputing the existence of a marriage, you might consider filing a response. A response is not required under our rules. And his language didn't require it. He said, you should consider it. Now, the fact that they had that conversation and the judge knew the existence of a marriage was disputed means that permanent orders, he needed to make some findings about the existence of marriage. Judge Richmond asked me about that permanent orders hearing a moment ago. This court should note that there is no testimony that is sworn at permanent orders. None. So not only did the court fail to make sufficient findings about a common law marriage, there is no sworn evidence, no sworn testimony upon which those findings could be based.
Well, there's a reference in the briefs, and I apologize, I can't pull the page right up, that mother testified, yeah, we were married. Mm-hmm. Is that a statement but not testimony? She wasn't under oath when she made the statement?
She was not under oath, and there are two places in the December 7, 2011 transcript where that issue is brought up. First,
Mr. Parrish, I hate to interrupt you, but on page 12 of the transcript, the judge swears, it's page 12 of the permanent orders transcript, if I understand correctly, the judge swears in the wife. At page 13, he asks her if they were married in April 2004, to which she replies, correct.
Yeah, that was what I was referring to, is so being summarized in the brief.
There is sworn testimony.
I see it at page 11. The first question, so the two areas in the transcript, or the two points in the transcript where the court asks, the first one is the question where he says, you were married, and she responds in the affirmative. The second one is after the swearing in, and he asks, based on the petition, your marriage was in April 2004.
Question, she says correct.
Question, and she says correct.
Okay, it's a leading question, but nonetheless it's testimony.
That's not really our argument, though. It is, but that's not what we're arguing. What we're saying is, this judge knew from the previous hearing that the existence of the marriage was disputed. And so this judge had a responsibility to find out if that was a wedding ceremony or if that was common law marriage. He had already had this conversation in this case about whether or not the parties were married, and had heard on the record from the respondent that there was never a marriage. I think the respondent both said that and then said absolutely not, and then went on to discuss his faith about common law marriage. The point is, there is no marriage, and there is no findings about marriage beyond, I concede, the one question after the witness was sworn in: were you married?
Mm-hmm.
Now, mother's argument is that because that is uncontroverted, there should be no grounds for reversal. Here, what we're arguing is the case law is very clear. If that is a disputed issue, and I'm suggesting that it was disputed on the record on August 30, 2011, then the court must make findings about that marriage in order to dissolve it. There are no findings, none.
And on page 17, the court said, at the same hearing, in making his findings, the parties were married in April 2004. They've been separated since January 2008. Two minor children were born to the marriage. The marriage is irretrievably broken. Findings he made on the record.
That's at lines 6 and 7, if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. on page 17.
Mm-hmm.
Your Honor, that is insufficient when the court had already had a conversation with the respondent that the parties were not married and that he should file a response taking that position. It makes the question, must it be disputed in a pleading, or is the record that was made at the emergency hearing on August 30 sufficient? And we're taking the position that it was disputed on the record in a hearing with this court. And as a result of that, this court couldn't, I guess, ignore that record and simply find, based upon the two inquiries, one sworn, one not, that there was a marriage. There is no evidence to suggest that there was, not an exhibit, not a license.
At the August 30th, 2011 hearing in mm-hmm. which the husband disputed common law marriage, was he under oath at the time he made
sure.
those statements?
I referred the court to page 18. That colloquy begins on page 17 at line 18. And that's where the respondent says, I've never been married, he says, from her. How can I be divorced? He goes on to say that he doesn't believe in common law marriage.
Mm-hmm.
But he was not under oath.
I read the entire transcript and I'm quite certain he was not under oath.
I believe you're correct.
Because he stormed out of the courtroom a few minutes later, so he was not.
Okay.
Correct. I think that's correct. I'm sorry for not referring to a page or a line number, but I think Judge Richmond is correct. Here, I'm trying to frame the question based upon what's the existence of the marriage in dispute. Mother argues that it wasn't contested at the right hearing. It was contested, and that's proved in the August 30 transcript. Mother argues that it was not disputed on the record, but in a pleading. It was disputed on the record, and I've already answered your questions about whether that petition for APR.
Even though you don't have an opponent, you are limited to 15 minutes. You may want to turn to the other two issues, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And actually, I have a question about the property allocation. I understand your position is unfair to settle all the debts on the father. Is it also your position that some of the debts, that the amount of the debt is incorrect, that the fines as the amount of it is incorrect?
That is our position.
Why is that not?
That's argued based upon sufficiency of the evidence because of the inconsistencies between the exhibits that were presented and the only sworn evidence, which is the sworn financial statement. So we used one example to show those inconsistencies that I can point out to you now, and that is the $15,000 father's debt that was signed up a couple of weeks before current orders. There were two other numbers for that debt that was presented to the court.
Let's assume there was an exhibit that showed something different, a different amount. And doesn't the court, on a sworn statement, have the right to accept some evidence, reject other evidence? And there was evidence to support his finding in the sense that there was a sworn statement that the debt was $15,000, and your client wasn't there to argue the other side of it?
No, he was not. And Mother's argument is that the court's entitled to rely on a sworn financial statement. Mm-hmm. Here, what we're suggesting is the court on its face had contradictory evidence, and so we've made three arguments.
So can't the court say, I find this more persuasive than the other, and made a determination?
It can infer that. It can.
Yeah.
Our three arguments there are, there has to be competent evidence to support the court's findings. If it does, so fine, I'm going to rely on this. And the Nuzbeck case is the one that we cited there. The court also has to have substantial evidence. That's the Boulder Meadows case. And there is not substantial evidence to support the court's findings regarding either the amounts or the allocation. And third, it has to be sworn. There was no sworn evidence in the first part of the hearing at permanent orders, and that's the part of the hearing where Ms. Berkovitz was.
Can't the judge rely on the sworn financial affidavit?
Yes. If there's contradictory evidence, as there was here, the court at minimum needs to inquire about that, those inconsistencies or those contradictions. If the court decides on its face to rely simply on the sworn financial statement, at least it needs some sworn evidence to support that. And the court didn't receive that at permanent orders on December 7th. The final piece to that answer, Judge, is because the court found that Mother was voluntarily unemployed and imputed some income to her, the question about equity must be raised. In other words, if there is some earnings imputed on one side and other earnings on the other side, is it equitable to allocate all to one side? And that's the argument that we've made.
Your time is well over.
Thank you very much.
We appreciate your argument. The case stands submitted. You're excused. We will issue a written opinion in due course.